the highest authority of his time on acting, disapproved of the term old school in connection with the word acting. I had employed the phrase the old school of acting, meaning what we most of us have meant for many a year, and Signor Salvini took some trouble to correct me. Old school, new school, what does it mean, he asked. There's only one school, la scuola della verità, the school of truth. Now, with any lesser man, we should argue, and we should ask him to explain his meaning a little more precisely. But it will be far more sensible of us if we accept the correction and learn to pull ourselves up whenever we divide the indivisible and repeat over and over again to ask ourselves, there is only one school, la scuola della verità. So if my title remains as I originally planned it, the old school of acting, this is the last time that I shall use the phrase. My first meeting with Signor Salvini was in Florence in January 1913, when he was 82 or 84, for the moment I forget which. I called on him with Signor Carlo Placci, who had undertaken to interpret between us, and we talked for an hour. Salvini's voice was quiet, his mind clear, and although so old, he was physically in good condition. In appearance, he seemed to me on first meeting to resemble Bismarck. Later on, it struck me that Flaubert was nearer the mark. It was chiefly his face and his voice which one remarked, and he used these with very great effect when speaking about the theatre. And of course, he spoke to me of the theatre and of nothing else. On that first occasion, Carlo Placci began by explaining that I was once a student under Henry Irving. Salvini said that he had known him. I, scenting a criticism of Irving's methods as an actor, hastened to assure Salvini that Irving was not a very good master, as masters go. That is to say, that where he was really triumphant was as an actor, and that as a master he always wished to impose his own personality on the pupil, which after all is not the business of a master. The master should lead his pupil and should be ready to help at every turn, but he should leave the pupil quite free. If the pupil becomes like the teacher, it is then from choice and not because he sees no other means of expression than that of imitating the master. So I told Signor Salvini that Irving was not a very good teacher. At this, Salvini raised his eyebrows, just as one fancies that Bismarck, that old German actor, must have done on occasions. And Salvini cried out, "Ma curioso! Curioso!" That's strange. Then turning to Placci, he said in very dulcet tones, which rose and fell like the voice of the last century, "I always understood that that was the special quality which Irving possessed, that of being a master." "No," I said, acting in my turn and trying to look as foolish and as young as possible. "No, we, the younger people at the theatre, used to think of him first of all and last of all as a great actor." Seeing my expression, he did not continue to speak further upon this matter for the moment. I then told him that we in England were, in a sense, a race of policemen. policeman is typical of the English race. This probably is an exaggeration, but it sketches the picture, especially for Italian comprehension, and serves to explain how Irving, with his scientific movements, his scientific play of voice, was interpreting that type, man as policeman, a passionate man expressing no passions, the man who quietly controls multitudes and says little and has no expression on his face, and that to do this was the very best that could be done in England so far as acting went. I then told him that for me there was only one kind of acting, Italian acting. At least that was the kind of acting I enjoyed most. And that on entering an Italian theatre, no matter how small a town in Italy, I felt in a good humour with all the people there, both in the audience and on the stage. That I felt that snobbery had not come into the place, since it had been built and it never would come in. And that no one was curious about anyone there, but that all were interested and prepared to be like guests at a table. That there was no neighbor, and there was no ticket holder who sat next to you, and that here the whole world was in harmony, quite at its ease. I had in my mind two special theaters, Scarpetta's at Naples and the Politeama Nazionale in Florence. But Salvini continued to speak of English actors. They are not serious, he said. That struck me as very curious. Of course, he dropped some very nice and charming things at the same time and spoke in great praise of the beautiful voice of Irving and of his expressive face. But he kept on reverting to the same phrase, he is not serious. I think he expected us to be surprised and not to understand, so we waited, Placci and I. And he then went on to describe his impressions on going to see Irving act Hamlet. These impressions are in a book of Salvini's memoirs, but I do not happen to have the book, and so I'll tell you what Salvini himself told to me. Looking particularly grave, and with his voice still lower, he began. When I was in London, Irving was at the height of his fame, and I wished to see a performance that I had heard spoken about by everyone I met. So I took my loge, that means my box, and I prepared myself for a great treat. The curtain rose upon the first act. I saw a figure, melancholy, distinguished, pathetic, and noble. I was enchanted. I looked. I listened to the end of the first act, which was most finely interpreted. Irving's beautiful gestures, his grave expression, the tender and solemn notes of his voice, all conspired to create a very strong impression. I was greatly touched. At the end of the first act, I said, "Yes, that is Hamlet." During the interval between the first and the second acts, I saw a friend in the stalls, and I beckoned him to come up. I was thoroughly impressed. The curtain rose on the second act, and again I was enthralled, charmed, and saddened. It was a wonderful and dignified piece of work. I said to myself, as the curtain fell on the second act, "Hamlet is not for me." Salvini meant not for him to play. I turned to my friend and assured him that I should not play Hamlet in London. "See what you will," said I. "This is the most perfect rendering that can possibly be dreamed of. it is impossible for me to attempt it.
The curtain rose upon the third act. I was all attention. It was the scene between Hamlet and Ophelia. But to my astonishment, everything was changed. Where it had been profound and serious before, now something was different. I find it difficult to explain, went on Salvini, why the English actor, after having progressed so far, should suddenly have changed. Here at the most serious moment of the drama, at the meeting between Hamlet and Ophelia. But changed he was. Cambiato. Then he added, that is not serious. To me, all this was very interesting, for I know the Italian actors, and I understood what he meant when he said the English are not serious. I have seen many Italian players, and they have the charming way of distinguishing nicely between that which is very serious and that which is not really serious. Characteristics are not serious to them. Passion is serious. To sit at the table, as in the first act of Mrs. Tanqueray, and discuss people and things, is to these men so unimportant a matter that they will prefer to wait until the dramatist has been moved with the passion in the play before they will move. Because, I suppose they say, why should we waste ourselves now? Why be serious over these external and cold parts of life, these manners, when already the eternal and vivid life itself is signaled to appear and will later on demand all our seriousness? It is quite obvious that the actors in England are very apt to do the opposite and to expend themselves on externals. At least it is generally so, although there are a few exceptions. But Salvini felt that even our great exception, Irving, failed in this, and so he passed the judgment, not serious. Nor was he any more encouraging about the French, the Spanish, or the Russian stage. Of the German stage, he was rather inclined to think well. And I was somewhat surprised at this, considering that the Italian temperament and the German are so wide apart. I asked about Mounet Sully, the French actor of 1880, and so on. Mounet Sully, said Salvini, is the darling of the French, but he is not serious. Although he is so fine in much of his work, when he tries to render passion, he at once adopts strange, unnatural gestures, and a whining, chanting voice as if he were a singer. It's enough to throw one into a fever, said Salvini. He's no longer true. He suffers from the tradition of the Comédie Française. In fact, he and Irving and most of the foreign actors, while able to imitate nature up to a certain point, can go no further. Beyond that point, their imitation ceases to be nature and becomes conventional with exaggerated gestures and mannerisms. Of the Italian actors, speaking of those of 1913, he said that he found them all very limited, good only in one direction, even if in that. He classed the styles of acting under three forms: comedy, which treats of familiar life lightly; drama, which treats of familiar life seriously; tragedy, which is quite different, treating of imaginative fiction, fictitious persons, often composed in verse, and yet requiring the actor to convince the audience that the speech is normal and that the characters are real. None of the modern actors, he said, are good in all three styles. They are all comedians, not tragedians. They are comedians acting tragedy. A tragic actor is not to be found.
When I was a young man, went on Salvini, we had many tragedians. Modena. Here Salvini's whole person swelled and his eyes dilated. He was my master, not an actor, a god. He said this not in a loud voice, but solemnly, gently, perhaps as excusing the rest of humanity. It was really charming, this recollection of his old master, by a master. Then he mentioned other names, unknown to me, and he spoke of them all as being very fine and serious actors. He went on, all the modern actors who are now filling the important roles in the theatres of Italy would, in those days, have been given the fifth or sixth role. Carlo Patlacci here broke in, saying, then you consider that the stage in Italy has deteriorated since those days? To this Salvini, after a long pause, Graver decided, yes. I then asked him whether he would also go so far as to say he believed that when he was a young man, the stage had deteriorated from the stage of 50 years previous to that time. Salvini looked perhaps a little bit suspicious as to what that might mean, though I cannot tell what was passing in his head. But in the end he said, I am inclined to think that such may have been the case. Towards the close of this first visit, I asked him if he had time to look at some of my designs, and I spread these before him. They were a loose set of prints, then on the eve of being issued in my book, which was entitled Towards a New Theatre, which Dent brought out. He took them and we began going through them, and every now and then he picked out certain designs and put them aside in a heap. These designs, which he had put aside, he now took up and spread out before him. Then, leaning back in his chair, he settled down and looked at them again, saying a word which was more often used in Italy than elsewhere, bella, which means beautiful. His voice had again assumed the mysterious and hushed tones that he loved so much to play with on his stage, and of course I was pretty well pleased. But to receive praise was not my object in showing the designs to Salvini. I wanted to hear one thing from him, as the representative of the great days of acting, and one thing only. So I asked him, will you please tell me, can the actor act in such a scene? He turned round, for I was behind him, as if the ghost in Hamlet was about to appear before him. He frowned and said, Macche, which is untranslatable, which means, heavens, why ask me such an amazing question? And he said, these scenes liberate the actor. They liberate him from the little Gothic room in which he has been shut. He then drew a big breath, spread out his chest and put his hands, as if about to address the Senate in that wonderful speech in Othello. Most potent, grave and reverend seniors. Then he touched one of the steps in one of the designs. You felt that he wanted to be moving on it. I then told him that in England, actors put forward the argument that although the scenes were beautiful in themselves, they were quite impossible to be acted in. His eyebrows went up and down rapidly. He touched the design again with the tip of his fingers, and he said in measured tones this. The actor who cannot act in that scene
is no true artist. Non è artista. He always spoke in measured tones. He never was loose in his manner of speech and never offhand. He then took my hand as we were going, and he held it for some moments, as actors will do with the younger men and women of the stage. And while holding it, he spoke further and very gravely of my work. As what he said was not about the actor in relation to the scene, there is no need to record it here. But sweeter and more encouraging things I have never yet had said to me by anyone in any theatre, or anyone of so ripe an experience. I had never before met a great actor of the past who told me that my scenes were good to act in, though often an incompetent actor had said they were impossible. And so that first meeting with Tommaso Salvini in 1913 is one of the memorable days of my life. When old men of 30, 40, or 50 had seen a foe in me and looked upon me and my ideas as a danger to themselves, this young man of 82 or 84 saw a friend and gave me a guarantee that my principles will prevail.